Hey everyone, welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there's enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry. I'm so glad you're here today because I have an incredible guest with us, Danielle. Danielle partners with founders, entrepreneurs, and executives who are stuck in a mundane, unrewarding cycle to help break them free. She helps them in areas like difficult conversations, being more assertive, direct, speaking up, saying no, boundary setting to help prevent burnout, money conversations, asking for more, public speaking, being able to connect better during presentations, and so much more. In doing so, she helps her clients get what they want, not just what they think they can get, so they can move toward a truly authentic life they can live on their terms. Thank you so much for being here today, Danielle. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to have a really great conversation.
Me too. And I would love for you to just really dive into how you got here today, and then we'll go a little bit deeper.
Okay. So I had been coaching for about 6 years. I did my corporate stint. I did the conventional route and I became a coach. And you know, when you're a coach, it's the thing that's drilled into your head is you need a niche. Mm-hmm. And everyone has a nervous breakdown trying to figure out their niche and how to talk about their niche. And I was like, I don't have a niche. I want to be as broad as possible, which isn't good either, but that's how I lived in my job for a while. And then a few years ago, I started hearing the word confrontation come up a lot. I mean, it probably was always coming up, but I just started to hear it. And people would say, I'm bad at confrontation or I'm scared of confrontation. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, I don't really understand what they're talking about because my definition is to confront. And they weren't using it that way. So I started to pay attention to when they would use the word. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, it's around conversations. It's all around conversations, asking for things, speaking up, getting a raise, raising your prices, any difficult conversation. It could be with a spouse. It could be with a parent. It could be with a child. It could be with your boss. It could be with an employee. And, you know, they were how to say no when you want to say no rather than saying yes. And boundary setting is a big part of this. And so it was all around that stuff. And I was also like, okay, so I know what it's like to feel stifled because I was always very direct. I've always been very direct. Mm-hmm. There was a part of me that sometimes wasn't. And I felt like I died a little bit inside when I couldn't be myself and I didn't understand why, like the period, when were those times? Mm-hmm. So I knew what it felt like to not do that. And mine might've been more extreme than others because I have this relentless need to express myself. But then I also wondered, well, what happens when you don't do it physically? Like, where's that energy going? It's staying in your body. And then, so what ends up happening is that you don't say something, you don't say something, you don't say something, and then you explode in some way, basically. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is a thing. Like everyone almost says this. I don't have this problem, whatever the percentage was, I didn't have yet, I got. And all of a sudden I became unoffendable. Like nothing anyone could say bothered me. And I thought, well, if nothing bothers me, I'm free to say what I want to say, not like in a negative way, but like, and I thought I felt elated because there's such an amount of, think about it. Like if you're not saying what you want to say, what are you saying? And mm-hmm. who are you? And you can't be authentic. You can't. Mm-hmm. So I just, there's not one scenario that this can't apply to. I made up the word confrontationalist. I called myself an expert, which is a weird thing to do. Like, that's not for me to say, but I'm like, whatever, I am kind of sort of. And then I rebranded and I found my niche finally.
I love it. And I think it's such an important niche as well, because it's something that, like what we were talking about prior, conversations, having the conversations, people get really worked up or fear having confrontation when it's just really being able to say what you need to say and feel free to say that. Because like what you said, you became unoffendable. But when we are able to be our authentic selves and share what's really on our mind, our heart, in a way, it's coming from a place of compassion versus just trying to be rude or mean. And like, there's this concept that I think people feel like, oh, I have to be nice about it. I have to be kind about it. And it can really be damaging into the relationship because you're not being honest. And I'm curious, what is your definition of confrontation? Because there's a lot out there, but how do you define it?
So my definition is to deal directly with someone or something you've been avoiding out of fear. And dealing means confront, right? So, and you know, the opposite, what people don't understand is that when you don't confront, the conflict that you're scared of having is more likely to happen if you don't say something than if you do say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just with like anxiety, for instance. I know like the more you feel anxious about something, it starts to unravel in that regard because you're so fixated on that aspect of it where you're like worried it's going to happen. And sometimes it does because you're so focused on it happening. So just even with confrontation, being able to have those conversations, why do you think it's so important to have confrontation? Why do you think it's important?
Because if you don't say what you want to say, you carry that with you.
Yeah.
It's not like you think about it and you're like, oh, okay, I didn't get to say that thing. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of obsess over it. There's many different symptoms of it, if you will. Like mm-hmm. if you have a friend and your friend is like, you feel like monopolizing whatever the conversations or, and you just are, you're complicit in that. If you allow someone to do that mm-hmm. and you don't ever say, so I'm feeling kind of, you know, invisible here. Mm-hmm. And it's something that it comes up a lot. And, you know, I haven't said anything and I'd like to talk about that because I want to keep our friendship. Right. That's, mm-hmm. that is not something that rolls off of people's tongues. It just doesn't, right? Mm. And because they also think that they're wrong. There's something wrong yeah. with wanting or needing something. So it's a layered thing. So if you don't yeah. say it, think about it. If you're scared to talk, it's fear of speaking. And it is a form of expression. So like, if we think about it like an art, it's getting stuff out of you. And it is a very important, if you believe in energy, which I do, I talk a lot about it. It is an energetic release. Mm-hmm. And the feeling for when I work with clients, they're terrified. The word itself is terrifying. Forget about the work. And, mm-hmm. and they're so excited the first time they do this thing that they were dreading, and then it builds on itself. So how cool is it to just be a person who has a conversation and you're not scared? Sometimes you could feel uncomfortable, but I mean, I'm sorry, like almost everything can be uncomfortable at times.
That's very true. And I love that you said too about the conversation with a friend, if like just the example you gave, because I've been in that situation a few years prior and it was really uncomfortable for me to talk about it, but I did it and I did feel this release. And I do believe in energy because it can start to work up in your body. And I'm curious, what does that look like when people are really holding in that energy and not speaking up? What have you seen or heard?
So they're very reactive rather than being responding, right? So reactions and yeah. knee-jerk responding is taking a beat. Mm-hmm. They're not present. They're fixated on the person and how messed up they are. And I can't believe that they did this thing. And there's a victim aspect to it because there's a feeling of powerlessness on the part of the person that doesn't say something. And so powerless means that the other person is more powerful. So there's a fear involved in that. So it's just, it just builds in a negative way. And by the way, I just want to say that just because you say something, that doesn't mean it will change either.
Right. Right.
Right. The goal for me and for what I teach people is the goal is to say it, not to get something. The goal is to feel better, and how you feel better is expressing yourself. So it is like every now and then I'm in a situation where I'm like, oh, I gotta say something here. And I haven't necessarily. And then I go, you are the confrontationalist here. This is what you do. Just figure it out. And I know that doesn't sound terribly self-compassionate, but it is, it does help me go. It's hard and it's awkward for sure. And especially if you've known someone a really long time, that can make it more difficult. Mm-hmm. And the other person might explode for sure. Mm-hmm. And then you have to let them explode. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully go, okay, so where are things now? Right. Like you mm-hmm. have to, it's kind of like you're holding on. Like there's, mm-hmm. It's like I'm holding on to the banister while that other person has a reaction. Mm-hmm. And then you continue on.
It's like rupture and repair, right? Where it explodes, but then you repair the relationship. But I so appreciate you bringing up the fact that it's about you, like being able to release it and say what's on your heart and mind versus you don't know what's going to happen in that reaction. You can't control that. You can only control right. speaking up. And that's what I'm hearing from you too. And the work that you're doing with so many individuals. And I'm curious, why do you think it's so hard for people to really speak up, ask for what they need, what they mean when they're saying things?
Well, I think that they were taught not to in various ways when they were very small. So, when we're very young, we don't have rational thought. Mm-hmm. And so the way that the messaging that goes on with your parents or with teachers, social media now plays probably a big part of it. And we never actually got the chance to go, do I agree with that? Mm-hmm. If someone tells you, shut up, if a parent tells you to be quiet, if a parent tells you that you talk too much, mm-hmm. if your parent tells you that you're stupid, like there's so many different levels of, I consider it to be abusive because mm-hmm. you're telling someone not to have a feeling basically, and so it starts there. And so then what happens is your perception is formed mm-hmm. and then you can, when you, and it becomes like almost a coping mechanism. If I do this thing, someone will not tell me that I'm bad in whatever way, because then shame develops. Mm-hmm. And so you adapt because you have to, because you're surviving. And then that just never goes away because no one ever then goes, remember when you heard this, forget about it. It's a part of who you are. And that's why the work that I do isn't a quick fix. When people think there's some kind of quick tips, now, not to say that there aren't things that I can recommend, but this is about, it's almost like cult-like in some ways, there's a brainwashing that goes on.
And because it's rewiring the brain, right? It's understanding that like what you've been taught or understood as a young child and having to uncover those layers doesn't happen overnight. Like just like a wound, if you get a scrape or like anything that you fall down and get hurt, it takes time to heal and really go back to normal, or even not even back to normal, because there is no normal. It's a new normal.
Yeah. There's a really great person. I don't know if you know Gabor Mate. He's amazing. In the personal development space, he just wrote a book called The Myth of Normal. And it's a really interesting, he talks a lot about early childhood trauma and the ways that parents were taught to raise their kids, among other things. And it's really interesting to hear him talk. And anyway, sorry, it just triggered the name of the book.
Yeah, no. I appreciate that. I definitely need to check out that book as well. And I'm curious, because you have done a lot of client work, you've worked with so many different individuals of all calibers. I'm curious, what are one or two client success stories you could share with us today?
So I had one client come to me who more or less blanked out during presentations. She She was so scared of presenting, and it was a big part of her job. And she needed to not be that way anymore. And, you know, it's not just like someone's scared of presenting. It's many things, but that was the focus. That was the problem that she came to me with. And so one of the things that when people have this fear, so it's a fear of public speaking in a sense, it's just that the size of the room is smaller, let's say, in her case. And so I said to her, it's not like it just happens with the presenting. Someone tells you you're going to have to present and your nervous system starts to freak out and you start worrying about it and you're obsessing about it and you're scared for however many weeks or days before the presentation. And it affects your nervous system, your heart palpitations and sweating. And if your body is freaking out about something, it's like a fight or flight thing. You are literally terrified of dying and getting killed. And so then there's the presentation and there's an enormous amount of self-consciousness that goes involved. You're so focused on yourself that you can't be available to see the reaction. You can't shine. You're just criticizing yourself during the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And chances are you did a good job or a well enough job. Because if you continue to be asked to do presentations, it means you're not messing up. And then there's the beating yourself up that happens afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's a three-parter. So what we ended up doing was, I'm like, okay, so you have a loop in your head that you're unaware of, like most of us, that's telling you how horrible you are in whatever way. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I suggested to her, I said, what if you set an alarm 5 times a day? And that when your alarm went off, it could be once in the morning when you're not at work. It could be 3 times when you're at work and then 1 time at the, and I, when that alarm goes off, ask yourself, what was I just thinking? Mm-hmm. And it's like catching yourself in the act of torturing yourself, basically. Yeah. And she found it really helpful to gain an awareness of what's going on kind of behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. There's rational thought and then there's unconscious thinking. And so the negative self-talk. And so slowly, once, you know, everything starts with an awareness. So once she had an awareness of what was going on, she understood that there wasn't something wrong with her. And she felt better about the fact that she, because understanding is a crucial part of this, or knowing that something is going on here. It's not like just that you're bad at this. It's not like a one-off. And, you know, slowly, slowly she started to lose the fear. And then it just became a thing that she did. So that was pretty major. I was really happy for her that she was able to do that. And then one other, it's funny, I was going to say it all has to do with talking, but it does all have to do with talking. But I had a client who was kind of a computer guy. And, you know, computer guys are generally like insular. And he had all these great ideas for other things. And he wanted to talk to people in other departments. And he was terrified. And so we had to figure out a way for him to become less terrified. I mean, of the smallest things. So I said to him, do you have a doorman in your apartment building? And he said, yes. And I said, do you ever say hi to your doorman? He said, no, I just walk through. And I said, okay. And how about when you're at the supermarket, do you ever talk to the person at the checkout counter? And he goes, no. And I said, okay, this is your homework. I want you to say hi to both of them. Mm-hmm. And I said, you need to know that there's going to be a positive reaction, most likely on the other end of that hello, because people feel seen, because no one, they're invisible, these people, you know, in terms of like, in terms of the situation that they're in. And so we started at such a very basic level. And the stakes were a little higher, and he would talk to someone at work in a different way. And it's a very small process, but it builds on itself. It's a small step. And then eventually it's just natural. that you would go up to the person who before you would be scared of and the content of the conversation, and you would share it and get positive feedback. And then once the positive feedback becomes more and more, it's a non-issue.
Mm. I love both of those examples and I appreciate you sharing them. And the first one is just like what was triggering my thoughts were patterns, identifying the patterns that are happening. It's not a one-off time, but being able to identify the thoughts in between the day and really setting those alarms 5 times and understanding, oh, what was I just thinking about? So gaining that awareness, because then once you have the awareness, you can do something about it versus yes. if you don't.
I'm not sure I understand.
Oh. Sorry, he's talking to me. She didn't understand. Most people don't understand.
Siri is just like everyone else.
Yeah. But I do appreciate the pattern aspect. And then even with the second client, building that confidence, because I think that's the biggest part of it. Once you start the conversations, very small increments will allow bigger opportunities, changing the conversation at work, approaching it differently to build upon that and being able to identify those ideas that he had, but being able to take those and actually start communicating and having conversations. Because that's what it's about. Once we start having more conversations, we feel more inclined to start doing more things as well, because we're not holding ourselves back internally too, because I think that's what's a big part of that, where what we're telling ourselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, and think of the self-imposed jail that you're living in and how small that keeps you. And that's actually the purpose very often is to keep you small, because small equals mm-hmm. safe for a lot of people.
Right.
So if you don't talk to a lot of people, the chances of being told you're wrong or bad or whatever it is that you know you're concerned about is less. So it is a very, it's unfortunate. It's a lot of people have it. Probably almost everyone has it in their way, but it is amazing to see people who are able to do the thing that was so terrifying to them as if it was never a problem.
I love stories like that. It just shows too the work you're doing, but they're doing the work as well. You're guiding them.
They're doing the work. I'm a facilitator, yeah. and I ask a ton of questions, and on occasion I make suggestions, because they're even terrified of talking about it, of the scenario. So I have to find the thing that they might be able to do, because that makes them feel relieved. They know it's a partnership, what we're
Absolutely.
Doing.
I love it. And that's what it's about. And, you know, I'm curious, because we were talking about this earlier too, where a lot of times the clients in particular that you're talking about, they're saying yes to themselves in that growth and understanding the awareness and making those changes. But a lot of times people have a problem and a hard time saying no to things. And how can people start to identify when, how, and why it's absolutely okay to say no to things?
Well, they have to work with someone.
Yes, exactly.
The idea needs to be introduced to them first. Yeah. So, because it is ingrained in their head that saying no to someone else is selfish. Mm-hmm. You know, it people are going to maybe not like you. And all these horrible, catastrophic things are going to happen mm-hmm. if you don't say yes. And they have to be told in different ways over and over and over again that, sure, maybe. I mean, I was invited once to a bar mitzvah of someone I hadn't seen in 20 years. And I didn't go because I am a Jew and I do not like going to bar mitzvahs. They're just too long for me. And I'm only prefaces my religion because I don't want to be sound like, but I didn't see her for 20 years prior to that. And she invited me to that. And I was like, I declined, and she stopped talking to me. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, mm-hmm. I don't even know you, why are you even inviting me? You know? So someone might have a negative reaction, but you also have to get used to that too. Because if you don't have the reaction, it's always going to be negative and it's always going to be worse than it actually is. Right? Yeah. It's always going to be, and it's never going to be good, ever. Yeah. So you need to know that there could be a neutral reaction, mm-hmm. a positive reaction, and a negative reaction. And sometimes, at least for me and a lot of the people I work with, if someone has a negative reaction, you then know that you care about yourself because you defend, like you basically can say, what is going on here? Like, I just declined a dinner invitation and you're having a meltdown. What is going on? Because that's a part of the person you've never seen before.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to know that that person can possibly a lunatic, you know, and then that makes you feel less. I know that's a hyperbole, but you, it makes you feel like you're on equal footing here.
Mm-hmm.
That person gets to ask and you get to say no.
Yeah.
Just like you can ask for something and someone can say no. There's nothing wrong with it. It just is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And I think too, it's just, it's hard for people to know what the reaction is. They want to, well, I know they're going to react this way, so I'm prepared, but you can never be fully prepared what someone's reaction is going to be. And it just gives you information. I feel like it's feedback.
Yes.
And being able to understand that too. And there's so many different conversations that happen on a daily basis. And you might be just used to saying yes and not having to rock the boat, but what kind of situations fall under confrontation umbrella, would you say?
We could say that any conversation that you're not going to have because you're uncomfortable with what you think is going to happen, which is that the world is going to come to an end. You're going to do something so bad. Mm-hmm. So we could say difficult conversation is also an umbrella, and mm-hmm. under which could be asking for, if you work for yourself, mm-hmm. raising your prices and telling your client, asking to get paid. It's crazy how many people are scared to ask to get paid for work that they have done.
Mm-hmm.
Negotiating also. So those are all money things. Mm-hmm. And the reason why those are hard is because there's the people don't understand their own value, among other things. Telling someone, boundary setting is a huge one, which is basically telling someone they're not allowed to treat you that way. Mm-hmm. It's not as cut and dry as that, but it's someone who is careless with you in whatever way, you need to say, I don't like that. And however you say it. And boundaries are not a one and done thing. You have to continue mm-hmm. to say them until they hear you or they don't end up hearing you. And then you have to decide, is this person going to be in my life anymore? It could be, yeah, I mean, it's a boundary. It's saying no. It's a difficult conversation. Interviewing falls under this also. And you know, there are a lot of women, I work with a lot of women, and they feel powerless with regard to men in business. And, you know, there was an article years ago that was written by Sheryl Sandberg in the New York Times, and it was called Speaking While Female. And it made me crazy because she was talking about people, women who get interrupted in meetings and they sit in the back. And I'm thinking, I don't get the point here, because if someone interrupts you, you get to say, I'd like to finish my point,
yep.
Period. You have the power, if you know that you have the power, that you have the right, but mm-hmm. a lot of women are conditioned to be quiet and be good. And, you know, women are meant to be seen and not heard and be nice and agreeable. And mm-hmm. so there's so, like, public speaking falls under that as well. And anything that involves talking, really.
Which is like everything, right? I appreciate the breakdown too, because you're right. I think a lot of women struggle, especially in like the financial aspect of like asking to get paid for the work, being kind, like all these different entities, but understanding too, you have a voice, you have the power. You just have to recognize that you have the power before giving it away. And I think that's where a lot of people sometimes will give it away versus actually address the issue when they've been interrupted in a meeting, especially in like corporate. I've seen that so much when I was in corporate, but women are just kind of like pushed down more than like empowered to speak. There's great individuals and great companies that do allow that conversation, but there's a lot that don't. And there's a long way to go, I think. I think it's something that it's understanding we have a voice and we have to use it. If we want to be heard, we want to be able to get our needs met and what we're working towards as well.
And I think something that's really important also, because again, this is based on conditioning, mm-hmm. How they were raised, but it started with lean in, with Sheryl Sandberg, and a lot of the women that I knew would say, we want the men to be in on this conversation because they need to know what needs to happen so they can change. And I'm like, okay, everyone needs to change. There's a dynamic that is put on us. We didn't choose it. It's societal.
Yeah.
And I was like, but you're mad at men. So basically you're asking the men to change without looking at yourself also. And so if you're just waiting for someone to change, you're giving them the power that you're mad at them for having already.
Mm.
If you want someone else to change in order for you to feel better, you're giving away your power, basically. So my approach is to look at yourself and find out where you're complicit in a dynamic, because it takes two people to have any sort of relationship or conversation, and look at you and go, what aren't you doing, or what do you need to do that's scary? That's what we need to look at.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with the boundaries aspect too, just to go back to that for a second. Like when we start changing, when we start using our voices, everything around us changes. It takes time, but that change might not be how you wanted it to change, but it will change that dynamic when you start speaking up for yourself. So I do think it starts with us, that inner work that we do, and rewiring the brain, like we were talking about earlier too, of understanding, how do I want to show up? How do I want to use my voice versus, well, this person needs to change. You can't control what people do. Only person you can control is you.
Yeah. And also there's a very good possibility that when you change, mm-hmm. it will not be received well, because everyone has their role, you know, mm-hmm. and in your family, everyone has their role. And in a relationship, you have your role, and the other person could go, wait, I did not sign up for this person. And sometimes it works out okay, and sometimes it doesn't, but it's okay because it is. And what would you prefer? Would you prefer to not be yourself so that the other person is happy? Or would you prefer to be yourself and find someone that likes the you that you've become? Because growth, no matter what it is, will affect change. Mm-hmm. That's great, but you change and people change, and they're allowed to not like it. Mm-hmm. Allowed, and you're allowed to be okay with it. So it's about understanding that life ideally should be intentional also. Like, you want to be intentional with your life, and that's work. That's hard.
Yeah. Never said it was going to be easy.
Right.
Neither one of us.
Right. And that's what I say to people with conversations. Mm-hmm. I had a client who had a very difficult person who kept wanting to have a conversation because she was creating drama that actually wasn't there, this other person. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, would you like to know what I would do in that kind of a situation? And I told her, and she goes, yeah, but I don't, that's not how I don't deal with things that way. And I said, I know you don't. Mm-hmm. I don't either. But what is your goal here? Do you want it to mm-hmm. stop, or do you want to be yourself in this one conversation? If you want this to stop, you can stop it.
Yeah.
It just, you can't, this person is relentless. They, you know, and the goal here is to cut it off. So you can't always be, you have to put your eye on the end result sometimes, and like, what's your goal here?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's hard. It's never easy. But once you start doing it more, it becomes a little bit more natural, more empowering. But those first initial conversations that are really difficult, like once you get through that, it just gets a little bit easier each time. At least that's what I think of my experience. And I'm sure, like, with your clients and just your experiences.
100%. I mean, it's like anything that we do. There's some, it's weird how as we think that because we're adults, we should know how to do everything.
Yeah.
But if you haven't done it, you have not done everything, that would be impossible. So this is something you haven't done. And it is also something that isn't necessarily valued in our society.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to really, you know, I think it's values assessments are really interesting because we don't actually know what our values are. We might know what some of them are, but also, okay, so you have these values. Are you living the values? Probably not. And so I happen to really value honesty and authenticity. And it feels very bad when I can't be myself. And so I have to figure out a way to be able to be myself in any given situation. I have to read the room in order to figure out how that's going to look like. You have to kind of be really agile in that. Mm-hmm. But before all of that, you have to be accepting of the fact that you're not perfect and that sometimes things aren't going to work out and that sometimes people are going to get mad at you and sometimes people are going to have really irrational reactions, but they're happening anyway.
It's a hard pill to swallow, especially being, I would say, a recovering perfectionist, as well as people pleaser, all of those factors. But I think once you start really realizing that too, it just makes life a little bit easier to deal with too. And like enjoy, not even deal with, but enjoy, because you're having these conversations and you feel more grounded when you're doing that with being able to speak up and being able to have those conversations. Because like what you were saying too, you're not an expert at it right away, especially if you didn't grow up with having those conversations in the household or with friends or anybody at work. But it's a learned skill, essentially, if you haven't had it. And you're not going to be perfect at it. You're never going to be perfect at it, because you're dealing with different humans each time and each conversation is going to be different too. I'm sure you could speak more to that.
Yeah, I mean, so perfect should just be taken out of the dictionary because it doesn't exist. It's not, I don't understand the word existing. So the way I think about it is this. So if you can master some of these skills and be present. So if you're one, I hope they don't get mad at me. You know, what if I say the wrong thing? Because first of all, define what that means, because what does wrong actually mean? Mm-hmm. I want them to like me. Okay, but why do you want them to like you? Like, these are all like conversations that we have. Well, what does it mean if they don't like you? What does it mean if they do like you? If we can get rid of this loop of I'm wrong in however many ways, and I don't want to be seen as wrong, and that's a shame spiral. Mm-hmm. If we can get rid of all of that, and then you're closer to, the idea is to be present, period, in the room. Because if you're in your head, you can't be present. If you're having these thoughts that you're paying attention to and fear, and the fear is also taking over your body, you can't be present. If you're present and you say something like, you know, the other day we were having a conversation and I just want to bring this up because I've been holding it inside and I just need to get it out. And this something was said that kind of triggered me. And we need to figure out a way not to, I would love it if we could figure out a way not to have that particular thing come out, whatever. And if the other person goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I can't believe it's still bothering you. What is like that? It was like nothing, right? So somebody is having a breakdown in front of you. And all you said was, I would like to talk about this so that we can figure out a way for it to not happen again. And that other person has a huge reaction. So the other person is having a huge reaction because they think that they did something wrong, right? So you're both worried about doing something wrong. And so that person has that. But if you're not present, you can't see that that person is having a very large reaction to something that is just a simple request. Mm-hmm. And you're not getting sucked into that person's drama and that person's knee-jerk reaction. So if you let that person speak and go, can we try this again? Because clearly whatever it was that I said, it was something that made you unhappy and that could also trigger whatever. But I mean, obviously I'm being very vague with this, but it's about if you're there present and watching someone have a really big reaction to something that is just an everyday, like something happened and it felt bad. You're getting information also in that conversation. They're telling you something about themselves. And, you know, I had a situation recently with a friend and it was the first time in my life that I was gaslit, literally, which makes me lucky, I guess. But, and I was like, wow, I can't believe that's going on. And I basically said, that can't happen again. Cause that was you said this thing that was very personal and very, it's as if you haven't been with me for the last however many years that whatever it was, this thing was a problem. Mm-hmm. And I said, if it continues, I'm going to have to move away from this conference. This is someone I've known for years. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't threatening her. I was basically, it was my own self-preservation. Mm-hmm. I can't have someone tell me that something I'm feeling isn't right. Mm-hmm. It's a feeling.
Yes.
So, you know, I had a situation that I was like, oh, I've never had this situation before. I was almost excited about it in some ways because it was a new experience for me. Right. But I have to take care of myself. We have to take care of ourselves. Almost nobody cares about it. It's going to give us as much thought and care as we have the ability to do if we work on it.
Absolutely. And it starts with us, with everything that we do, everyone we encounter. Ultimately, it's keeping ourselves, and I always say this, like, grounded and prioritizing ourselves, because if we don't, like you said, who is going to? We might have amazing family and friends, but ultimately we have the power to make those changes and choices every single day that are going to elevate us and empower us to use our voice, but also really work internally first to externally.
Yes, absolutely. And it's okay. I mean, a lot of people think that's selfish, as if selfish is bad, but it isn't. Selfish, it is only bad if it's at someone else's expense. Mm-hmm. And even then, if your intention is good, like, we're not, as we said, we are not perfect. We're living our life based on lived experiences. So if you want to do the work, we're constantly course correcting. And so the next time something happens, we will have a different awareness, because everything starts with an awareness. I mean, for all of the work that I've done on myself, there's lots and lots of things I'm sure I don't even know about. I can't list them because I don't know what they are yet. And so, you know, it's about a desire to feel better. All of this is about feeling better, period. Yeah. That's the goal.
I agree. It's the most important goal too, because what you were saying too, with just being gaslit from a friend, it's all our feelings are valid. How we react is in our control, but our feelings are 100% valid all the time. It's just, what do you do with those feelings? How do you approach those feelings?
Absolutely. And something I say to, you know, people walk around with these labels that they have by being told that they are something by other people. Right. And so one of the things that a lot of women hear is that they're too sensitive or too aggressive, let's say. Now, aggressive is a really strong word. I prefer the word assertive because it's a very different word. But when I say to people, when someone says that you're too anything, what they're saying is that you're too X for that person. That person doesn't like your sensitivity level. That person doesn't like your delivery. It's not like everyone thinks that. It's not a character assassination. It's that person who's basically saying, I don't like how sensitive you are. Stop being that way for me. And I'm like, that's all it means. And it's obnoxious. And you're not too anything, because some people might think that I'm too much. Some people love it, right? It's okay. I am not for everyone. No one is for everyone. No one is universally liked. No one.
Yep. Hands down.
It matter, because you find your people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That tribe will be attracted to you and what you have to offer. Because you're right, not everyone is for everyone, but that's the beautiful thing about human connection and being able to have little parts of people and be able to connect on certain things in different capacities. But you're right, it's not universal, and realizing that, and that I think can really help remove the people pleasing for people, understanding that you aren't going to please everyone, and that's okay. It has nothing to do with you. It's just that interaction between the two. And it just doesn't fit, and that's okay.
And also, when you're a people pleaser, and it's amazing to me how many people wear it like it's a badge of honor. It's mystifying for me. The one person you're never going to please if you're a people pleaser is you. Like, never. And also, it's important that people understand that they're They are a people pleaser for a reason, that they found out that they thought that being agreeable and fitting in and helping was a way to not rock the boat when they were growing up. So if all of these things, you know, I do not a lot of it, but like depending on the client, we talk about inner child work. Mm-hmm. And I've said your inner child is driving your adult bus right now. Like this person who is the person who is behaving this way with this fear isn't you as a 30, 35, 40, 45 year old person. It's the little girl or little boy inside of you who was that scared person and had to develop a certain way. And the goal is to understand that so that you can stop beating yourself up for this inability to do something that you think should be easier. In theory, sure, but not for you based on your experience. So it's a way to help gain some self-compassion if you can understand this isn't random.
Yeah, no, I love how you put that. And I'm just curious, I want to go back to just when you started your business and really defining your niche and being able to really grow, what were maybe one or two or just a couple of the obstacles you hit along that road?
So trying to talk about confrontation the way that I see it was really overwhelming for me because I'm trying to redefine a word. I mean, not for the sake of redefining a word, but because this is what is helpful to people and how I see it. So it kept me a little bit frozen for a while because in my mind, I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to talk about this. Hello, you hire people to help you with that. That's what I do with other people. So the obstacle was that, and like creating a brand around that and having it, trying to explain it and make it relatable to people. Something that really helped me with that. So this was during the pandemic, the lockdown part of it. And Clubhouse, was a great place for me to do my market research in that I would go in. And the word is people go, oh, what's that? And so over time, because you introduce yourself when you would do that, I learned how to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And now, even now, I talk about it a little bit differently because I've been working on it longer. So that was a really, like, I had the idea, I would say a good 2 years before I actually rebranded. So because it's a good idea. I know that it is. I just don't know how to implement it or talk about it. So I hired someone. And we figured it out. I mean, it was an accomplishment. So now I could tell you that one of the things that can make this challenging is that people love it. They love the idea of it. It's so cool. They understand it. Mm-hmm. And the word itself is so triggering that sometimes they don't want to do the work because just the word itself.
Because they're not ready. They're not ready to face the reality of what could be. But you're right, that word can be triggering for some. But I love that you have been able to brand it and talk about it and have those conversations and the curiosity around it too, because it's not something you hear every day, especially like what you're doing and being an expert in it as well, because confrontation has such a negative connotation when it really doesn't need to be because it's conversation.
Right. And that's kind of the goal here. And, you know, I knew that it was provocative and I was glad about that because in a sea of coaches, because everyone's a coach, you just have to say it. And, and I was like, this is different. No one does it. And it's provocative. It is both. Oh my God, I'm curious about that. That's so cool. I love that. And then there's the sprinting away from me.
I just like visualize that. Seeing the word coming at them. No, I think it's something that definitely the more conversations you have about it, the more people can really identify it and understand that it, the work is there and you can do the work, but you have to want it. You have to want that change, and you have to want to be able to really do that inner work, because it starts internally. Like we've been talking about this whole time as well, of understanding at the end of the day, it's about feeling better, releasing that energy. That's even just talking about it. It's just a sense of release and freedom mentally and physically.
Total freedom. And it's thrilling, actually, and I was having I had a consultation the other day with someone. I have to try and find out if not everyone is aware of how they're stuck or what is wrong. They just know that they need help. Mm-hmm. So we were talking and she was telling me, and I said, I'm still not getting that you're stuck. And we went through it for quite some time. And I said, listen, you're not unhappy enough to work with me. You're not miserable enough to work with me, because this is work. And if you have to feel really, like, unfortunately, this is how it goes. You have to really want it to do the work. And, the first thing you're confronting is yourself. And so if you're not unhappy and it's kind of like, fine, this is going to be a waste of money and time for you. So it's a weird thing to say, but it's true. You have to really feel like, I can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And you may not know what the it is at the moment, right? But you know that there's something that is getting in your way. And you've had it. You've had enough, so much so that you're looking for help. And I'm going to find this and I'm going to do this. And those are the people that really have a lot of success, because it is challenging work, but worth it.
Absolutely. It's like you have to hit that rock bottom for you to really, and whatever that looks like, but being able to know, okay, it's time for a change. Like, I just can't go on anymore like this.
Yeah. No one who's happy ever goes, I wonder if there's anything that I need to fix to myself, like, ever. Like, that doesn't happen. Let me see if there's something I got to talk to. It's like, you can't, it doesn't happen that way.
Never. At least in my experience.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's where the work is done, when you're miserable.
Touche. And I'm so curious, on this whole journey that for entrepreneurship that you've been on, what are maybe your top two or three tips that you could give entrepreneurs that are starting out or in the midst of the journey?
I mean, a lot of people say this, but I agree with this. You just have to start. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people will say, even with coaching, I don't know what I need to work on. And I'm like, that's what you're going to work on with me. And so with what happens, one of the things that resonated with me the most when I was getting certified was not attaching yourself to an outcome. Mm. So if you go into something and go, oh my God, this is going to be great. I'm going to work for myself and this is going to happen and this is going to happen and this is going to happen. First of all, you don't even know that any of that's going to happen. But what that does is give you an enormous amount. It's an overwhelming, you're like throwing all of this stuff on this pile of, and then it makes you paralyzed potentially, like, because you don't know how to get there yet. It's a step-by-step process. So I think it's really important, if somebody is very interested in working for themselves, is to understand that I don't think there's anything. I don't think that there's failure or mistakes. I think there's learning experiences, and take it one step at a time, because not everything's going to work out, period. But that's okay, because it maybe wasn't meant to work out. So it's really about giving yourself a break. Mm-hmm. And many people who start off working for themselves have only ever worked for other people. Right. And so you're used to being told what to do, and now you're the person who's running the show. So that's really important. And I think that if it's really hard for you, but you really want to do it, you have to invest in yourself by hiring people to help you. Mm-hmm. 'Cause your strength, you don't have strengths in every area. I am not going to figure out how to build a website. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to, and it won't be as good as if someone else who does them for a living, it won't look as good. So I will pay someone to do that. And I think that's just like my taxes. I'm sure I could do them. I just don't want to. So I'm paying an accountant. So it's really about understanding that you can't do everything. You shouldn't expect that you can do everything, and figure out how to do that. And also there's a scarcity mindset that comes with working for yourself, and like, you're never going to make enough money to be able to, you know, I can't pay for that because that's a lot of people about a lot of things. But understanding that you're starting to do something you've never done before, mm-hmm. and it will be uncomfortable, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yep. And it just goes even back to the confrontation, right? When it's uncomfortable, you take those micro steps to starting to do it. Just like the client you explained, that starting with the conversations with the doorman and the cashier and all of those factors, really being able to take it one step at a time. Because I mean, when I started my business, it's like, yeah, I'll be like a millionaire in 6 months and all these like crazy ideas. But I think there's such a beautiful lesson in those aspects that we have to stumble upon to get to where we want to be. And I think it's just having grace and compassion for ourselves and knowing we're not an expert when we start. Babies aren't an expert at running right when they come out of the womb. Like, it takes time. They have to learn how to sit up and tummy time and all those little steps. It's the same concept with building a business. So I love those tips. And I think they're so spot on. And I mean, I've heard them, but I love how you put them too. And the aspect of just knowing that it's never going to be one way, and just keep trusting yourself in that process.
Yeah, because honestly, it took me years to see that I don't do things the way other people do them. I don't. Like, I am driven hugely by my intuition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things that other people do don't make sense to me for me. Right. So I go, I mean, almost everything, like even a niche that I made up is great in some ways, but also really challenging in other ways, but it feels right. And so I have to figure out how to deal with the stuff that doesn't work, because there's always going to be that. And that, of course, this is going to be a little bit, I'm in a lane by myself. And so if everyone does things the way other people do them, it's not going to work for you, unless of course that would have been the way that you did it. And so I'm not a big believer in advice, period, because that's someone's experience and they live it differently their life than you do. So if you can join a community of people and resources, and you know, even like the basic stuff that isn't interesting, of like setting up an office, you know, things like that. Those are things that are like, oh, I didn't know that existed. And oh, that's cool. And I'll look into that, like stuff like that, of course. But when it comes to like, I should be on, you know, all the social media, or, you know, I should buy Facebook ads, or maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
But that's what makes us unique and human, and having different perspectives. And it just, and that's even this channel too, is being able to show that there's so many different avenues you can go. There's no one way that's the right way. And just really leaning into, I love that you go off your intuition. So I feel like I'm similar too, of just like what feels right, even if it seems crazy or people are like, what are you doing? It's trusting yourself and that internal drive to do things. And I love that's what you've been able to do and create for yourself. And I so appreciate everything you've shared today, because I could have this conversation with you for a few more hours, I feel like. But I just appreciate your honesty and your transparency in this journey of being able to have confrontation become a conversation, and really understanding there's no difference. It's just being able to speak what's true.
Exactly. A confrontational conversation is an uncomfortable conversation. That's it. That's it. I mean, if it were that simple, but that's really
right. It is that simple. But Danielle, where can people find you, use your services? We're going to link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
So at my website, which is theconfrontationalist.com. Which is a good thing that you're linking it, because I always misspell it. And my Instagram and TikTok are the_confrontationalist. And then you can look me up on LinkedIn. I am not heavily involved at the moment in social media. It is something that I have not confronted to the fullest extent yet, but if you want to get in touch with me or to have a, you know, any sort of consult, if anything resonates, my website is probably the best way to get to me. You can also read more about it.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Danielle, for just coming on today. I so appreciated this conversation. I feel like there's so many insights that you gave, tips, everything to really just continue the conversation and have more awareness around confrontation being just an uncomfortable conversation. But thank you again.
Thank you. This was great. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Likewise. And make sure to like, subscribe, comment below. What was the biggest takeaway from Danielle today? I'm sure she would love to see that comment. And we will see you on the next episode.